want to go back for a minute. Teach us to number our days. How did God teach us and what did he say? He said, from the day that you bring the sheaf and you wave it during the Passover season, you are to count. You are to number your days. You are to number your Shabbats. You are to count 7 Shabbats. Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. What I'm about to share with you is where the wisdom comes from and how the wisdom relates to being in the midst of the Omer. So we are in the midst of the Omer, the word meaning measure, and typically associated with the measurement of some substance, typically flour, an Omer of flour. In Exodus 16, starting in verse 16, here is what Adonai has ordered. Each man is to gather according to his appetite. Each is to take an omer, a measure, approximately 2 quarts per person for everyone in his tent. The people of Israel did this. Some gathered more, some less. But when they put it in the omer measure, whoever has gathered much had no excess, and whoever had gathered little had no shortage. Nevertheless, each person has gathered according to his appetite. So how would you look at the Omer here? It's proportional based on your appetite. But keeping in mind, the Omer is approximately 2 quarts. In this case, we're talking about manna here. A dry good, so to speak. It is 1/10 of an ephah. What's an ephah? A bushel. So there's much. So there's not much the definition about an omer or about omer. It's a heap that is a sheaf. Also an omer as a dry measure. That's from Strong's Concordance. And yet the omer, as it is known, is a mitzvah, a command. The mitzvah derives from the Torah commandment to count 49 days beginning from the day of on which the omer, a sacrifice containing an omer or a measure of barley, was offered in the temple. Up until the day before the offering of wheat was brought to the temple on Shavuot. So the idea of counting each day represents spiritual preparation and anticipation for the giving of the Torah in this case, which was given by God at Sinai at the beginning of the month of Sivan, or what you might know as the third month, and was done at the time of Shavuot. So in Leviticus 23, starting in verse 15, we're instructed from the day after the day of rest, that is, from the day you bring the sheath for waving, you are to count 7 full weeks until the day after the 7th week or the 7th Shabbat. You are to count 50 days. And then you are to present a new grain offering to Adonai. You must bring bread from your homes for waving, 2 loaves made with 1 gallon of fine flour baked with leaven. Talk about this next week, because next week is Shavuot, believe it or not. So up until the day of Shavuot, an offering of barley was typically brought. Yet on the day of Shavuot, the offering was wheat in the form of 2 loaves of bread. So when we look at the day, we begin counting. And the day we have arrived at our destination, and yet do we pay attention to the journey? We mark the day we begin, we mark the day we arrive, but are you paying attention to the days in between? The journey is what makes the destination. So what has been happening in your life since you took on the mitzvah of counting for now the sixth Shabbat? Someone share with me. There's a lot going on you didn't prepare me for. I can tell you that there was a lot going on even before you took your first breath. We're currently in the midst of our counting, so we have yet to arrive at our destination. Each of the four Gospels provides accounts of what transpired after Yeshua's resurrection on first fruits during the Passover season. Whether you look at John chapter 20, Matthew 18, Matthew 28, Luke 24, or Mark 16, you have a brief account, but not a full account, of what transpired over those 50 days. You're keeping in mind, this is day 42. 2 days ago, at this time approximately 2,000 years ago, Yeshua was with us up until the point we were counting till we got to 40. Then he left, but he said, stay here and wait for the promise. So he left in the middle of the journey that we were on. So what happened in the midst of the first Shavuot? What is the first Shavuot, you ask? It would be the first Shavuot after the first Passover, that being the Passover that led the exodus of Israel from Egypt. Yet technically, Shavuot did not begin until they entered the land because it was associated with the harvest. Yet those first 50 days after the exodus are in essence the first Shavuot, because you have the first Passover, and if you have the first Passover, then you can technically count 50 days, seven Shabbats, to get to what would have been Shavuot in the wilderness. Yet they were commanded, when you come into the land, you are to count, and then you can harvest the crops of your land, and you can partake in them. So on what would be the second day of the counting of the Omer, Pharaoh pursues Israel. And further within this time period, we see not only the move of Adonai, but this also points to Yeshua. So there are aspects that occur in those 50 days in the wilderness that we can relate to Yeshua. So come on me with a journey. Come with me on a journey on the first Shavuot. So 3 days after the Exodus, and regardless of the plagues and devastation that befell Egypt, Pharaoh mobilized his army and pursued the Jews to bring them back. Perhaps this was a result of Pharaoh realizing that the three-day feast of the Lord in the wilderness was a permanent escape from his clutches. In other words, I let them go. While back, he said, well, let us go 3 days into the wilderness to worship our God. That was probably on the mind of Pharaoh still. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, and this is Exodus chapter 14, verses 5 through 8, Pharaoh and his servants had a change of heart toward the people. They said, what have we done letting Israel stop being our slaves? So he prepared his chariots and took his people with him. He took 600 first quality chariots as well as all the other chariots in Egypt, along with their commanders. Adonai made Pharaoh hard-hearted, and he pursued the people of Israel as they left boldly. They left in the night, so to speak, but there's no way for approximately 2 million people to leave in secret. Somebody might notice. Then we get to the 20th day of the first month, or Nisan. Pharaoh traps the Israelites. Pharaoh's army trapped the Jewish people against the Sea of Reeds. The Shekinah, the glory of the Lord, intervened and blocked them from attack. Exodus chapter 14, verses 9 through 11. The Egyptians went after them, all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh, with his cavalry and army, and overtook them as they were encamped by the sea, by Pinherot, in front of Baal Zephon. As Pharaoh approached, the people of Israel looked up and saw the Egyptians right there, coming after them. In great fear, the people of Israel cried out to Adonai and said to Moses, Was it because there weren't enough graves in Egypt that you brought us out to die in the desert? Why have you done this to us? Bring us out of Egypt. That was the 20th day of Nisan, several days after the Passover. Then you have the 21st day. The following day, the Lord commanded Moses to order the Israelites to march directly into the waters of the sea. Nishon ben Amidav of the tribe of Judah was the first to jump into the sea. The waters split and the children of Israel walked across the dry land in the midst of the sea. When the Egyptians attempted to follow after them, the waters rushed back and drowned them. The Israelites separated their deliverance with the song of the sea. What is the song? The song of Moses in Exodus 15. And yet what occurred on this day, but the outstretched arm of Adonai who saved them as he parted the Red Sea. Exodus chapter 6 and verse 6. Therefore say to the people of Israel, I am Adonai, and I will free you from forced labor of the Egyptians, rescue you from their oppression, and redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. Pharaoh in hot pursuit, with the Red Sea being a barrier, preventing Israel from escape and therefore certain capture. And yet it would be the outstretched arm of Adonai that would save Israel from Egypt. We'll see the outstretched arm again in Yeshua, hanging from a Roman execution stake, whose death would redeem Israel and the world from certain demise. So the outstretched arm of God appears first in the Exodus, and then we see Yeshua and his outstretched arm. Then we come to the 24th day of the first month, the preparation for the first Shabbat. 2 days later, the Israelites arrived in Marah, or Ilium, where they would receive the commandment to observe Shabbat. Keeping in mind, the Shabbat wasn't given until later, but the preparation was occurring now. While in Ilium, Adonai prepared a test for Israel to see if they would observe his mitzvot. On the 15th day of Iyar, manna was given. Iyar is the second month. And on the 22nd day was the Shabbat test. 1 month after the Exodus, God provided bread from heaven, manna, which sustained the Israelites during their years of wandering through the desert. In light of the divine provision of food, the commandment not to collect manna on Shabbat was restated on the 22nd. And this is found in Exodus chapter 16, verses 1 through 7. I have it in my notes, but I'm not going to read the entire thing. But keeping in mind the instructions given. And then the test is given in verse 22 through 30. On the sixth day they gathered twice as much bread, 2 omers per person, and all the community leaders came and reported to Moses. He told them, This is what Adonai has said. Tomorrow is a holy Shabbat for Adonai. Bake what you want to bake, boil what you want to boil, and whatever is left over set aside and keep for the morning. They set it aside till morning as Moses had ordered. And it didn't rot or have worms. Moses said, today eat that because today is a Shabbat for Adonai. Today you won't find it in the field. Gather it 6 days, but the seventh day is a Shabbat. On that day you will not find any. However, on the seventh day, some of the people went out to gather and found none. Adonai said to Moses, how long will you refuse to observe my mitzvot and teachings? Look, Adonai has given you the Shabbat. This is why he is providing bread for 2 days on the sixth day. Each of you stay where you are. No one is to leave his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. So it was a test, and not everybody passed the test. What do we know about this bread to be? In that its origin is heaven. John chapter 6, starting in verse 32. Yeshua said to them, yes, indeed, I tell you, it wasn't Moses who gave you the bread from heaven, but my Father is giving you the genuine bread from heaven. For God's bread is the one who comes down out of heaven and gives life to the world. Then he said to them, sir, give us this bread from now on. Yeshua answered, I am the bread which is life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever trusts in me will never thirst. And what is revealed about Shabbat? It belongs to Adonai. It was something that he gave to Israel. And therefore, the words of Yeshua further establish. Then he said to them, Shabbat was made for mankind, not mankind for Shabbat. So the Son of Man is Lord even of Shabbat. So he's Lord of the Sabbath. God giving Israel the Sabbath right from the beginning of time, setting it apart for Israel thousands of years later. Keeping in mind it was the gift that didn't take on moths, didn't get destroyed over time. But time actually amplified how precious it was and still is to this day. Which leads to what occurred on the next day. Remember, Yeshua said in verse 35, whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever trusts in me will never be thirsty. So what occurs on the next day of the Omer, the 23rd day of Iyar? Water from the rock. 38 days after the Exodus, the Israelites arrived in Rephidim, a desert area. The people complained that they would die of thirst, but the Lord commanded Moses to strike the rock with his staff to produce water. This is Exodus chapter 17 and verses 1 through 7. But let me go to Isaiah 48:21, because we know what transpired. But I want to build upon that. Isaiah chapter 48, verse 21. They weren't thirsty when he led them through the deserts. He made water flow from a rock for them. He split the rock and out gushed the water. Anyone ever tried that before? Anybody ever been successful before in trying it? So there are accounts of this happening and what transpired, that they didn't get thirsty afterwards, that there was water as a result of this. When on a certain day, Yeshua conveyed the following. Now that the last day of the festival of Hoshana Rabbah, which is Sukkot, Yeshua stood and cried out, "If anyone is thirsty, let him keep coming to me and drinking. Whoever puts his trust in me, as the scripture says, rivers of living water will flow from his inmost being." What does Shaul say in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, starting in verse 1? "For brothers, I don't want you to miss the significance of what happened to our fathers. All of them were guided by a pillar of cloud, and they all passed through the sea. And in connection with the cloud and the sea, they all immersed themselves into Moses. Also, they all ate the same food from the Spirit. And they all drank the same drink from the Spirit, for they drank from the Spirit-sent rock, which followed them. And the rock was Messiah." So what are we experiencing on this journey, if not God revealing clues, glimpses of who Yeshua will be? We see him as the bread of life. We see him as the water coming from the rock. We see him as Lord of Shabbat. And speaking to the woman from Samaria as well, Yeshua conveyed to her, "Everyone who drinks this water will get thirsty again." Likely he was pointing to the well. "But whoever drinks the water I will give him will never be thirsty again. On the contrary, the water I give him will become a spring of water inside him, welling up into eternal life." Keeping in mind the rock that followed, the rock that Moses struck, there was no limit to it. It provided for them. And in essence, Yeshua is conveying, "I am that limitless rock. I am the water that brings forth life." So three of the most profound things that Yeshua conveyed during his ministry: Lord of the Sabbath, the bread of life, and the water that brings forth life, we see here. We didn't even talk about the light or the pillar of light that in essence guided Israel through the desert. Because who is he but the light of the world? I'll have to add that to my notes. It's not even in my notes, because I don't have a specific day for it, because it sort of started right from the beginning. So there is no specific day for it. So on the first day of Sivan, which is the third month, we arrive at our destination, Sinai. Then on the second day is known as Yom HaMeuchas, the day of distinction. On this day, Moses ascended Mount Sinai, and God told him to tell the people of Israel, "You shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." Israel is being made into something by God, distinct and separate, distinct and different from any other nation. Then from the third to the fifth, you have the 3 days of preparation. On the third of Sivan, the Lord instructed Moses to set boundaries for the people around the mountain in preparation for the giving of Torah 3 days later. And this is Exodus chapter 19, verses 9 through 15. This reminds us, these 3 days, not in number, but just in concept, these 3 days reminds us of the preparation prior to the Passover. You just don't enter in unprepared. Passover on the 10th day, you get a lamb. You set it apart from the flock. You take care of it. And in essence, you're preparing yourself to, in essence, kill it. Likewise, you don't go unprepared when entering the presence of Adonai. This too requires preparation. Coming to Yeshua requires preparation of the heart as well. So by no means does anyone just come, but God is in essence doing something to prepare you in advance. Matthew chapter 16, starting in verse 13. When Yeshua came into the territory around Caesarea Philippi, he asked his Talmidim, "Who are the people saying the Son of Man is?" They said, "Well, some say you're Yochanan the Immerser, John the Baptist. Others, Eliyahu, Elijah. Still others, Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah, or one of the other prophets. But you," he said to them, "who do you say that I am?" Shimon Cephas said, he answered, "You are the Mashiach, the Son of the living God." Shimon Bar Yochanan, Simon, son of Yochanan, Yeshua said to him, "How blessed are you, for no human being revealed this to you. No, it was my Father in heaven." Cephas was prepared by God to see who Yeshua is. He wasn't unprepared. Keeping in mind, part of the experience was the journey of Cephas, which is interesting in itself. Then we come to Sivan 4. Moses writes the Torah. According to a Midrash, on Sivan 4, Moses wrote down the first 68 chapters of the Torah from Genesis 1:1 to the account of the giving of Torah in Exodus 19. This is unlikely, but it's part of Jewish tradition nonetheless. So whether he truly and physically wrote down the first 68 chapters while on the mountain, we know one thing that occurred in chapter 20. God wrote down the Ten Commandments with his finger. So Moses is writing the Torah. What is promised of the new covenant? Jeremiah 31:33. "For this is the covenant I will make with the house of Israel after those days, says Adonai. I will put my Torah within them and write it on their hearts." Just what he did at Sinai, he's doing individually. You have your own personalized version of Scripture residing within you. "I will write my Scriptures on their hearts. I will be their God and they will be my people." Then we come to Sivan 5. On the fifth day of the third month, Moses made a covenant with the Jewish people at the foot of Mount Sinai, at which the people declared, "All the Lord has spoken, we shall do and hear." So, the covenant comes at the end of the journey. The covenant that God made through Moses comes at the end of the journey. The end of the counting of the Omer. Yet the new covenant was not offered at the end of the Omer, but was initiated at the beginning of the Omer. Keeping in mind, Yeshua said, "This is the new covenant by my blood, ratified by my blood." He mentioned it before he died. He mentioned it before the resurrection. So what occurred? It's likely that on first fruits, the new covenant was ratified. Because what did he do? He applied his blood to the altar not made by human hands on first fruits. Thus, at the beginning of the counting of the Omer, the new covenant took effect. Yet I will go a step further and I will share with you, and I'm still researching this, so it's a work in progress. For 3 days and three nights, Israel was outside of God's covenant relationship with him. Because of Yeshua's death, the covenant connecting God with Israel was finished. Yet the covenant that God made through Yeshua did not become valid or enacted or initiated until the third day, the first day of the resurrection, the first day of the Omer. So there were 3 days and 3 nights that not only was Yeshua in the grave, but technically Israel was in the grave with him. Because they were not in covenant together technically because of Yeshua's death. So then we come to the 6th of Sivan and the giving of Torah. On the 6th of Sivan, exactly 7 weeks after the Exodus, the Lord revealed himself on Mount Sinai. All of Israel, 600,000 heads of household and their families heard the Lord speak. And Moses would reascend and in essence would come back down later with the tablets. So it's on Shavuot that we receive another promise. Acts chapter 2 verse 1. The festival of Shavuot arrived. You've arrived at your destination. The disciples arrived at their destination. And the believers all gathered together in one place. Suddenly there came a sound from the sky like a roar of a violent wind, and it filled the whole house where they were sitting. Then they saw what looked like tongues of fire, which separated and came to rest on each of them. They were filled with the Ruach HaKodesh and began to talk in different languages as the Spirit enabled them to speak. I must go, but I will send you a comforter. The idea of Torah given in relation to the Spirit. God did everything through the Spirit. From creation onward, the Spirit was the power by which God enacted everything. To where when you connect Shavuot at the time of the giving of Torah and Shavuot at the time of the giving of the Ruach HaKodesh, what can we say? That God gave his commands, and through the Ruach HaKodesh, he gave us the power to live by them. So what did I just share with you? The first Omer where Adonai revealed so many things to Israel for the first time. Yes, it's the first Omer. What else did I share with you? What do you mean, there's more? Hopefully you know me well enough, there's always more. What else did I share with you? What may have likely been one of Yeshua's teachings during those 40 days in the midst of the Omer. What does he say in Luke 24, starting in verse 44? This is what I meant when I was still with you and told you that everything written about me in the Torah of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms had to be fulfilled. Then he opened their minds so that they could understand the Tanakh. What did I just share with you? The bread of life, the manna coming from heaven, Yeshua shared that. Yet what's he doing? He's in essence conveying a narrative of the Omer, the 50 days, but also the 50 days in which included his resurrection, his ascension, and his teachings in between. Could he have taught them about the bread, the manna? Could he have talked to them about the rock that brought forth water? Could he have talked to them about the Shabbat and being Lord of it? He conveyed those throughout the Gospels. Yet did he truly connect the Exodus and the beginning of the Omer with everything that would transpire after that? Because remember, it says, then he opened their minds so that they could understand the Tanakh, telling them, here is what it says about the Messiah. The Messiah is to suffer and to rise from the dead on the third day. And in his name, repentance leading to forgiveness of sins is to be proclaimed to the people from nations, from all nations, starting in Jerusalem. You are to be my witnesses. So it's possible that Yeshua might have shared with his disciples the Exodus and the Omer, and everything happened in the midst of it. Because everything that happened in the midst of it does what? It relates to him. So just because you're in the midst of something and you haven't arrived at your destination doesn't mean that the journey is any less important. Look what you might have missed if you didn't know that what you're counting towards, that God did things during that time, is just as miraculous and also points to Yeshua. So if everybody will please rise.